You're listening to
Sci-Fi Nick.
Greetings, one and all. Welcome to Sci-Fi Dig, show 324. I am your host, Aaron Makem. This week, I'm going to talk to you about Fringe. As always, the episode is going to be safe. And I got some news and some new DVD releases. Let's jump into the new DVD releases right off the bat here, because we got some good stuff. These are going to be for March 5th. So warm up your credit card if there's anything here that you want. Or, you know, go put it on one of the rental lists where it'll take 6 or 7 weeks or 50 days or whatever the stupid rule is they put in place in order to rent the stuff. And I'd like to say that rule doesn't work on me, but there have been a couple of movies that we were going to go see and then we didn't go see. And it's cheaper for me to buy the DVD than for the family to go see the film. So I just buy the DVD and I just lend it out to people who want to see it. But anyway, we have some good stuff coming up. Well, first of all, March 2nd, which is a Friday, you know, for all the Breaking Dawn DVDs are coming out if you're into that sort of thing. I've seen all the movies. I mean, pretty, you know, I seen, that's the only time in my life that I've, I behaved rather badly in a theater. I think I told this story that I don't know what happened to me, but suddenly I was that guy. I didn't mean to be, but not Breaking Dawn, but whatever one was before. See, my daughter's into it. So they saw the first movie and then we were going to go see the second movie and I hadn't seen the first. So it was on cable. So I watched it and realized what a piece of crap it was. And so then we went to the theater for all the rest. And, you know, it's a family outing. That's my excuse. But not the Breaking Dawn, but the one before this. I was in the theater with my family. And the story was just such a disaster that once I started, I couldn't stop. And my wife was finally, she's going to get us thrown out of here. And I'm like, you know what? I am. I have no idea what's wrong with me because I'm not that guy. But we got to the scene where her dad's doing the toast to wedding, talking about how he's a cop and they can do stuff like hide bodies and bury bodies and make people disappear and all that stuff. And then, you know, a little while later, she is pregnant and she, and if I'm spoiling this, I don't even care. She's pregnant and she's calling, she calls her dad from the vampire's parents' house, which isn't very far away, and says she's like in Switzerland or Sweden or some damn place, right? And, you know, he's talking on the phone. He's like, I want to see you. And she's like, well, you know, I'm here and I'm blah, 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 and hangs up. And I just looked at my wife and I was like, what, he couldn't afford the $8 a month for caller ID? And then she started laughing and that just set me off because, I mean, it was a huge plot hole as far as I'm concerned. You know, we're not in the 50s here, for God's sake. There's technology, you know, they can look it up. And then we get to the scene where they were on their honeymoon and it was like, you hurt me. No, I didn't hurt you. I blah, 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 back and forth. And I'm like, oh my God, man up. Okay. She said, it's fine. My God, stop whining about it. I just couldn't take it anymore. But at least the last installment has some good action in it and it kind of made it, made sitting through all the other crap worth it, kind of. Anyway, on March 5th, we're going to get Wreck-It Ralph in multiple variations, you know, DVD, Blu-ray, 3D. We're going to get the Red Dawn remake that, well, I just really don't care about. But, you know, I at some point in time, I'll probably watch it. It'll probably be on, like, TNT or something next week after the release. Because, well, it just has not gotten very good reviews. It doesn't look that good to me. And the original Red Dawn, as cheesy as it was, is still a fantastic film. We are going to get Nightmare on Elm Street on Blu-ray. I'm not exactly sure what is. It's going to be the entire collection. And it's going to be just under $45. I have the original Nightmare on Elm Street on Blu-ray. And it's actually pretty good. It's telling me number of discs is 5. So I'm assuming that They're not going to have, well, it says it contains films 1 through 7, but it's going to be on 5 discs. So I'm assuming we're not getting the new one on here, which they should kind of throw on there. Westworld on Blu-ray, great film, great sci-fi film, highly recommend that. We are also going to get Schindler's List on Blu-ray, and that seems to be about it, about nothing really great here coming out. We need more science fiction, darn it. That's about it. Now, if you live in the UK, you are going to get hopefully some Doctor Who. Let's see what's happening here. Well, you're going to get Game of Thrones season 2. Argo is going to be available as well. There is no Doctor Who. Oh, you're going to get a box set of Game of Thrones season 1 and 2 put together. That's going to be, if you haven't watched any of it, that's probably the way to go. And no, I see no Doctor Who. I have no idea what's up with that. But you're going to get Vex series 2 and no Doctor Who. That's kind of crappy, actually. And you're going to get Hansel and Gretel, Warriors of Witchcraft, which is that cheesy knockoff film that they released at the same time to try to get people's money. And it just gets like the most hellacious reviews. And it always makes me laugh because it came out like the same week that it came out in the theaters here. And people were like, this is not the one in the theaters. And I just want to be like, well, of course it's not. Because, well, why would they release it at the same time? You know, that's not how Hollywood works. But no, sure enough, no Doctor Who for you. That's about all we got coming up then. Let's see. We got a couple of good news stories here that I'm kind of excited about. IDW is going to publish print versions of Monkey Brain Comics. Monkey Brain Comics has been, you need to go to Monkey Brain Comics. I don't know if it's monkeybrain.com or monkeybraincomics.com. Google it or Bing it or Yahoo it or something. But they sell 99-cent digital comics on Comixology. I've been checking out a couple of their comics. I mean, I've downloaded it. I bought a couple of them, but I've only read one, which is Red Light District, which I really I like the story. Not a big fan of the art. It's not because the art is bad in any way, shape, or form. It's just not my particular style. Red Light District is kind of basically you have houses that are haunted, and this team, they go in and they put all the spirits to rest, and it ups the once you have a house, people been killed in, their spirits are still there, and they kind of lay the spirits to rest. I'm simplifying as much as possible, and it therefore increases the value of the homes. We also have the guy that does this, his business is kind of in distress, his marriage is falling apart, and in order for him to see the spirits, he has to get high. So you have all of that going on. I've only read the first issue. I haven't decided if I'm going to read the rest or not. Like I said, it's just the art is just not my cup of tea, and by no means do I mean that it's bad. It's just, you know, every now and then you come across something, it's just not for you. I've had the same discussion with people. I love the series Spartacus, and some people cannot stand the style that they show in the arena with the blood splashes and freeze frame, stuff like that. That does not bother me, but some people don't like that, so they don't like the show. And that's just kind of how it is about with comics. You know, I mean, I love all comics, but some art grabs me better than other. JMS is going to have a return to Joe's Comics. He had, if you remember, he had a bunch of Joe's comic stuff that, you know, some of my favorite stuff, Rising Stars, you know, the original trilogy trade of Rising Stars, not all the aftermath stuff. I really enjoyed that book. I picked it up on, I was going through a time in my life where I was out of comics, but like once a month I would buy 2 trade paperbacks. Without recommendation, I would just go and look around online and get some reviews and get some ideas and figure out, maybe find some people that, sometimes I would get people that I knew and I would buy their stuff. Some people I would just pick one at random and check it out and see if I liked it. And I picked up on the first book of Rising Stars. It was in trade at this point. And then I got the other two, and I was sort of to death that there was more, and I really dug it, everything about the story and the art. But anyway, it's going to return. He's going to start doing his own creator-owned stuff. And it's going to be through Image Comics. So it was through Top Cow. So I can't wait to see what is going to happen. The first book is going to be, it's going to start in May with 10 grand is going to be the name of the first book. And I usually like JMS's comic stuff. So I'm kind of excited about that. And I'm excited that a lot of people are going to comics and to tell their stories rather than, you know, a lot of comics are going to television shows, which is fine. But I like the fact that, you know, we kind of went through this shaky time period when I wasn't sure if comics were going to be a viable way to tell a story because of digital versus paper and all that argument that went on. But a lot of these independent people, man, you go to Comixology, and I wish there was one independent place where you could go online, look everything up, and then go to whoever's selling them to buy the books. That would be the best way to find independent comics, because at 99 cents, which is my price point for digital comics, independent stuff I'll pay a little bit more for. But, you know, you go and I'm amazed at what I can find out. There's just so much good stuff out there. So many stories, so much science fiction and horror and all that stuff. Just so much good stuff out there. And of course, I love reading them on the iPad or, you know, the Nexus or whatever. A million ways to read. I mean, you can get a 10-inch tablet now for like $120, you know, running Google or, yeah, running Android or something else. A million ways to read if you're interested in that. Anyway. There's a I found an article about The Walking Dead's new showrunner finally makes a comment about taking over. I'm not going to talk much about this other than saying that this season has been the best season of The Walking Dead thus far. They have the pacing down finally, and they're changing the showrunner again. I don't know if that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing, but my God, this is like a revolving door of people coming in and taking over this show. And I just don't understand, like, once you have it down, is it personal personality clashes? You know, is it a personal issue? What's going on here? But hopefully it'll keep up the good work. I mean, I think we can all agree that season one and two, although I enjoyed them well enough, and I really enjoyed the fact that it was different than the comic, the pacing was pretty crappy, and it was at times it was mind-numbingly slow. This is my favorite story of the week. The Game of Thrones director, David Petrarca, I'm going to butcher that last name, talked about how pirating of Game of Thrones has helped build some positive momentum around the show. Now, it's an HBO show. The only way to get it is if you have HBO. Even if you have HBO Go, you still have to subscribe to HBO. It's this old model that nobody, that people were just trying to adhere to because there's a lot of money in it. Now, he was just talking about piracy and how it has really helped to grow Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is the most downloaded or most pirated show out there. You can't get it through iTunes. You know, you can't get it. I mean, you can't get it like, you know, other shows the next day or whatever. So if you want to watch it, you've got to have HBO. You got to subscribe. You got to commit to that. And, you know, as we all know, it's not like in the old days where you could subscribe and then just cancel and then resubscribe, because every time you do it, they charge you a fee. And that fee keeps getting higher. I think it used to be like $5. I want to say it's like $15-$20 now whenever you do that, which is just ridiculous because all they could do is flick a switch. But anyway. And of course, you know, he announced that, and I'm sure, I would love to have been in that room. I am sure that it came down like a hammer after that. So he has to come back and retract his statement, which is, he comes back and says, I am 100% completely and utterly against people illegally downloading anything. Nobody wins by illegally downloading content. Here's the thing. You know, I'm not saying that you should pirate stuff. But, you know, I don't even know who coined the term oatmealing, right? Where, like with Game of Thrones, people will download it, you know, when it's on and then buy the box set. Because you have to wait an entire year or better, you know. And, like, right now, it's like, you know, Game of Thrones starts up in the first half of March. The box set was just released. I actually bought it, pre-ordered it, and have not watched one episode yet. And I'll get to why that has happened to me. But... you know, I'm just saying that, you know, I know some of those people, okay, that have done that. I know some people who have downloaded all season two and has yet to watch an episode, but those people still go and buy the box set. Is that, I don't know. Is that legit? Is that not legit? I mean, yeah, you're still pirating, but they're still getting their money. You're just able to watch it sooner, you know? There are people that I know that actually have downloaded stuff and have box sets that are unopened on their shelf because they wanted to give them the money because, you know, they like the show and they want to support it. And I think that in this day and age that there's a lot of people that are like that, that they want to support what they love. I mean, take comics, for example. People want to support what they love. What they would also like, though, is a guarantee that it's going to be worth it, right? People want to treat intellectual property like it's tangible property. Well, that's great, but if I buy a pair of jeans or I buy a set of tires and they wear out beforehand, I can take them back to the store and exchange them or get a credit. I cannot do that with a comic. I can't go buy your CD and say, man, you know, I paid $15 for this and it's a piece of crap. I want my money back. No, that they, you know, they want the pros, but they don't want the cons that goes along with that. And because of that, you know, in the digital, you know, in the old days, you'd just share a paper comic or you'd share a CD, right? And then if somebody wanted a copy, they would, you know, they would go buy it, or, you know, of course, they could always copy yours, a comic book they couldn't, but with digital, it's a little bit different. You know, you don't have that opportunity unless it is, you know, you break the DRM or whatever. And I'm not saying I'm pro or con. I'm just saying that, you know, I try to do the honorable thing when it comes to these things. I've read a lot of pirated comics. There, you know, and I have I have, you know, checked out things on other people's Kindles and been like, man, this is actually pretty good. And, you know, but nobody's going to let you take their Kindle home or let you take their you know, iPad home. You know, but if you're in the same room, you can browse through it and say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and buy this. But if the price point is right, then, you know, I'm all for supporting as much as possible. That's why I like independent books, because usually they give you a PDF format and then you can do whatever you want with it, right? I can read it on my computer. I can read it on my devices. I can look at it on my phone and I can back it up to, you know, however way I want to back it up. And I'm always going to have it if I want to go back and refer to it. You know, when you're doing the Kindle or the Comixology, you never know. They could go out of business tomorrow. And what happens to all your comics? Because you can't take them off the device. I mean, I guess there's probably a way to do it, but I have no idea. There's no easy way to do it. And, you know, you're kind of trusting that they're going to stay in business or whatever. The piracy debate is going to rage on and on and on, probably for years to come. You know, I know that they're trying to crack down on torrent sites. There's always a story about them cracking down on those sites and yada, yada, yada. You know, I don't know. It just, you know, I think that personally, I think that doing that is not going to reap them any more rewards. And it's not going to, I don't think it's going to increase their money, because I don't think that people that are downloading these things, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people I know that download stuff and they just compile piles and piles of stuff and never get around to it. You know, I think, you know, I don't know. And, you know, it's one of those things that you know, you can debate and argue about, you know, but I've said in the past, and I have no qualms about it, in the past, I've downloaded CDs, and then if I don't like them, I delete them, but if I like them, I go to Amazon and buy them. Why wouldn't you? Amazon MP3, I mean, you can do it in iTunes too, but for me, Amazon MP3, that's the store I prefer to use, but it's just easier. You click on it, it puts it in your cloud drive, and downloads it, installs it into iTunes or whatever media device you use, and it's one click. You know, and it's not like they're charging an arm and a leg, but at least I know what I'm getting. There's no way to know that unless you listen to it the first time, right? And it just seems like it's a big hassle. Not so much anymore with music. Now you have like a minute and a half cut you can listen to. You can kind of get a feel for what the album's like, and then I'll buy it that way. But and there's been enough sales that, you know, I'll risk $5 on a crappy CD. I won't risk $17. And realize that, you know, it's not very good. But it just, you know, ease of use is where it's at. And I really wish that HBO would offer these things up. You know, I'd be willing to pay $3 an episode to download them from iTunes or wherever, you know, Amazon, whatever. I'd be willing to pay that in order to be able to watch them. However, I don't want, the only problem with Amazon is I don't want streaming. I want to be able to put up my device and not have to worry about it. I mean, the way everybody else does it, it depends on your broadband connection. Well, I have DSL. It's okay. But if I want to update my computer or do something else while I'm downloading, you might as well forget it. It's going to take forever. It's still not easy, you know. But with iTunes, you know, I can put it on my phone, I can put it on my iPad, and then I have it. Put it on my Apple TV, and then, you know, I have what I need. But anyway, just kind of throwing it out there. I know everybody out here has kind of debated this, and you know, we've talked about it before. But anyway, so with all that being said, let's get into some Fringe, because as I stated last week, it's been a while since I've gotten to the weekly routine. And, you know, it's been, I think we're like 10 weeks in a row now, which is pretty damn good for me. But I'm running out of server space, which has been something that I haven't had to deal with in a while. And so since I do have to deal with that, I'm trying to keep the shows between an hour and an hour and a half. So let's jump into Fringe Episode 10. This week's episode is episode 10 of season 1. The name of the episode is Safe, and it originally aired on December 2nd, 2008. Now, before I jump into the audio clips, I have to set up the story a little bit. Last time we saw the equation being solved, right? And they have used this group of people, we're not quite sure who they are. They're led by Mitchell Loeb, and they go to a vault and they use this information and their equipment to set up a field around the vault, and they use a harpoon. They harpoon in and then they grab the rope that's attached to the harpoon. They pull themselves through the vault door, and they're able to basically use quantum mechanics and quantum physics to, you know, bend. They're able to bend it so they can go right through the wall, and they're stealing something, and they're coming out, right? They're grabbing stuff from safety deposit boxes. We're not sure what it is yet, but they're stealing these items and being able to escape. Now, what happens is that there's a countdown, and all the men get out except for one. He's trying to get out. He's rushing, and he gets halfway out, and what happens is that suddenly he's stuck, and their time is up, and he's stuck. And he's halfway in the vault, halfway out of the vault. He's asking for help. And, you know, the leader, Mitchell Loeb, shoots him in the head because they can't have anybody left. And they take whatever they stole, which we still not sure what it is. And everybody, you know, skedaddles. So we kind of open up this. We open this up with the group being called, the fringe group being called in to come and check this out. I mean, it's just some crazy things, right? There's a guy halfway, his body's halfway in a vault, halfway outside a vault, through the vault wall, and he's got a bullet in his head. Now, before I jump into the clip, I want to point out that this is right in the beginning here is where we see the Observer. Now, I definitely had to cheat for this one. This is one I never would have caught. And even though I sit here and I intently, it becomes a game. I'm telling you, it is just such a game. Not only do I enjoy watching these episodes for the third or fourth time, when you're pulling audio, you pay extra attention because you're trying to connect the dots. I'm trying to do that for the listeners of Sci-Fi Dig, for those people that missed anything. And I haven't heard any. I mean, I know eventually I'm going to miss something and somebody's going to send me an email or something. And I look forward to that day and tell me something that I missed, something that, you know, that I didn't connect right or that I missed something. And some things get a little complicated at times, but you know, it just kind of funny how different people are connected through different episodes and different acts to, and you later on, you realize it, you know? And anyway, so I had to look it up, and you can see the Observer in the very beginning of the episode. It's in the first like 3 or 4 minutes when, this team is breaking into the bank. Right. And we have a scene of, one of the guards who is watching, sitting behind a desk watching security monitors. He is shot, and there's a security monitor on the right. I have a screenshot as always, and in that security monitor you can see the Observer. I could not find this guy. I kept looking and looking and looking. I'm like, I know there's got to be an Observer in this episode. So finally, I had to do a Google. I had to Google it and find it, and figure it out. And again, Fringipedia is a great resource. I mean, there's several other pages I use, but Fringipedia does a pretty good job of usually telling me, giving me an idea of where the Observer's at. And what I like is rather than, I'm sure there's probably a screenshot here. I've never actually clicked on it. Yeah, apparently there are screenshots, but it gives you a general idea of where the Observer's at. So I still can go back and look and find him for myself, which makes me feel like I accomplished something, right? Anyway, this is the first audio clip is of the team arriving at the bank, and Peter and Olivia are discussing best friends.
You don't have one. Everybody's got one. Even I've got one.
What's that? A spleen?
Yeah, a spleen.
Unless one suffers from a splenia, a rare genetic condition in which one is born spleenless.
Thank you, Walter. So you seriously don't have a best friend?
Nope. Well, does a sister count?
Of course a sister doesn't count.
Well, I guess that I've always just enjoyed being on my own. Even when I was at boarding school, they used to call me Tom.
As in solo? That's cute. At least he had a nickname.
This is Philip Broyles with Homeland Security. Please have him call me as soon as possible. Yes, and they'll connect you.
Oh.
Clear the area, please.
Oh.
This is fascinating.
Security guard was killed. The surveillance camera's disabled.
So what do we have?
Nothing. This incident may be related to a recent series of bank robberies. This would be the third.
All in Philadelphia?
First was in Cleveland, the second in Baltimore.
I was in Baltimore. I remember a woman with particularly large breasts.
Each time, the only thing that's been taken has been a single oversized safe deposit box, all without so much as a breach of the vault.
Are the boxes traceable?
I have a call into the bank manager now. The who, what, and why? That's you.
Just when you thought things couldn't get any weirder.
Peter, I know this man.
What, the guy in the wall? Really? Let me guess, he's your best friend.
No, I mean it.
You know him from where?
To determine what happened here, we'll have to cut him out of the wall. Or at least pieces of him. I'll need some of this netting as well.
Raul. Raul Lugo.
You know this man?
Yeah, he was in my first unit of the Marines.
Then you have my condolences.
You're being serious?
Yeah. He's from Jersey. He's married. His wife's name's Susan. He plays baseball. He lives in Edison. I've been to his house.
Bullet in the head or no, leaving a guy halfway stuck in the wall wasn't the most professional move.
I thought it was a nice touch.
You can joke about it all you want.
Yeah, thanks. We had another grid. We should have tried to get him out. How are we doing?
Crappy. Self-sealing bolts, magnetic tumblers, some kind of old-school chromo alloy. Someone really didn't want this open.
How long?
A couple hours, maybe three.
We have one more box to go. If you're bitching about Raul as your way of saying you want out, then go. Otherwise, inject yourself and shut your mouth.
Now, they are injecting themselves with some sort of fluid. We're not exactly sure what it does, but it helps with the passing in, you know, in and out of the solid matter. Now, the next scene is of Walter and Peter in a big box store, like a Lowe's or a Home Depot or something like that, and Walter has never seen anything like this. Now, my only problem with this scene is, although, I mean, the scene is incredible, it's why are they here? Why are they at this store? Is there a reason? You know, you would think that, you know, I don't know. I guess this gave me something to think about. I'm sure that I'm overthinking it like I do everything in Fringe. But the idea here is that they're looking for a bone saw, right? Because they need to take a sample of the guy that's stuck in the vault door. Because there's not really, I mean, I'm not sure how you get the guy out, right? And they're not trying to get him out. They need to get a sample to figure out what's going on with him, how he was able to do this. I always just kind of assumed that the Fringe team would go to whatever city they were in. They would work with other law enforcement. They'd have access to other tools and stuff. Now, because I do a very bad job of this, I didn't pay attention to what city that they're in. And so I would assume that since they're shopping for a bone saw, that they must not be in their city, that they must be somewhere far away where they had to fly and they weren't able to transport their gear, because it doesn't make any sense otherwise. But that's a minor nitpick. This is a great scene, and I really loved it, and it made me laugh, and it makes me laugh every time I go back and rewatch it. The interaction between Peter and the sales girl is just hilarious.
This is amazing. The scale of this hardware store is unprecedented.
Actually, it's completely precedented. There's stores like this everywhere, Walter. All around the world in every city.
Well, if anyone knows that, it's you.
All right, what's that supposed to mean?
My last phrase?
Yes, your last phrase. If anybody knows that, it's you. What is that?
I was implying that you traveled extensively.
No, you were implying that I haven't stayed still much in the last 15 years. You were implying, and you've been implying with increasing frequency, that you don't approve of my admittedly nomadic existence. In short, Walter, you're saying that you're disappointed I haven't made more out of my life. That's what you're implying.
Yes, I suppose so.
The reason this store seems like such a miracle to you is because you've been holed up in a mental institution for the better part of the last two decades, which effectively does two things. One, it precludes you from knowing much of anything about me, about who I am, who I've been, what I know, and what I've done. And two, it renders any fatherly judgments you may have of me moot. Are we clear?
Can I help you guys find something?
Oh, yes. We're looking for an electric saw, preferably variable speed with an easily replaceable blade system.
What are you cutting? Wood?
Human tissue. Flesh and bone, it's more sinuous than you may expect.
It's really not that dire.
Oh, actually, potentially it's far worse.
I think that the saw you're looking for is around the corner, next to the routers.
Thank you.
No need to call the police.
Now, the next clip is us looking in on somebody who's going to, like I said, was going to play a much bigger part in the Fringe series, and that's Mr. Jones, who we met a couple of episodes ago. Now, he has an attorney who's coming to visit, and the exchange is between him and his attorney. He couldn't really care less about what this attorney is saying. You know, he's busy drawing pictures or making lists, and the attorney gives him a piece of paper that is I don't know if it's his appeal or what, and he promptly flips it over and starts writing a list of things he's going to need and gives it to the attorney and tells the attorney to have his people get him this stuff. And it's a weird list. It's like suntan lotion and just some rather bizarre stuff, and you're not quite sure what's going on, but it'll all pay off at the end of the episode.
Mr. Jones, as you know, we only have so much time, so... The sentencing is scheduled for next week. As I told you before, I think the best we can hope for is life. However, I will be filing an appeal.
You spoke to my people. Do they have any news for me?
Yes, they said that the job in Philadelphia was successful.
Good. Please tell them the following. They are to wire Mr. Loeb another $100,000. And to inform him of the location of the next item.
I'll pass that along.
Thank you.
Here is the document. If you just take a quick look at it. This is a standard document for appeal. If you'll just sign on the... What do you do?
Items that I will need upon your next visit. My people will provide them for you.
Dramamine? Suntan lotion.
As my employee, it really is none of your concern now, is it? What size are you? Suit size.
40 long. Why?
The address. My personal tailor. He'll fix up something nice for you. My way of saying thank you for all you've done for me.
Olivia goes and investigates Raul's wife. Raul is the gentleman who is the dead guy. You know, he's the guy that's stuck in a door. And so she goes and investigates, his wife, because that's the connection. And we have a huge revelation here. And this is kind of what the next, this is all, it's all been kind of coming to this, her interaction with John Scott and the whole going into the tank and the memories kind of bleeding together. And, initially when I watched this episode, I definitely did not see this coming. I was like, what's going on? And then when we get the revelation, I was quite shocked and I thought, man, what a cool twist. So, I mean, those of you that have seen Fringe and we're going through this again for the second time, you know what's happening, but I think if you stop and think back, it was really well done. They put this together really well. But anyway, I'm going to play the clip and the reveal was in there.
Raul moved out about 2 years ago. We hadn't spoken in months.
You know, I am so sorry. And please forgive me, but did he mention these robberies?
No. Can't say I'm surprised, though. What do you mean? Ever since he came back from the war, he was just dark. Depression, drinking. And I tried to help the best way I could, I swear to God, but...
I'm sure you did. And do you know anyone he was hanging out with? Any of his recent friends? Because I hadn't seen Raul in years.
You knew Raul?
Yes, of course. We served together in the Marines.
Oh, I didn't know.
We have met before.
Who, you and I?
Yes. We had dinner here.
You were in my house.
No, it took me a little while to remember because it was so long ago, but Raul and I met at Camp Pendleton, and we had dinner here the night that he became first lieutenant.
No. You weren't here.
Susan, I'm sorry, but I was. And you were a wonderful host. You made pot roast,
and
but
it burned. Yes. And we had to order in.
Yeah, and the delivery guy dropped the bag right here. And that piano was actually in front of the window. And the sofa was here by the fire.
Yes, I remember, but you were not here. The day Raul made first lieutenant, it was just me, Raul, and John.
Who?
Raul's friend from Pendleton, John.
John who?
John Scott. Are you okay?
And of course I left that. I love those, the clips to go into commercial and we get that string sound when they're, that shocking sound, and I love that. And so every time any opportunity I have to include that in the podcast, I will, because I've always just really dug it. I love they do a really good job of Fringe, more so than any other show, I think, of doing like the little cliffhanger before the commercial thing. And, you know, that actually translates pretty well when you're watching it on DVD or Blu-ray, you know, without the commercials. You know, it does a really good job. And you kind of, even though it's only a couple seconds till you're going to see the next scene, it kind of amps you up a little bit, you know. Now, of course, a big revelation, the fact that Olivia is remembering John Scott's memories and not her own. And I think it's pretty outstanding, and I really love that twist. Now, the next scene is Walter and Peter are at the bank vault, and Walter is cutting off the guy's hand so he can analyze it, and Peter's holding a tray underneath it, and the hand falls in the tray, and he's like, "Well done, son, very good job." And he's like, "Yes, I'm holding a tray." And so Walter's still kind of on Peter's case a little bit, as much as Walter can be on somebody's case about, you know, his potential being wasted and all that. And Olivia shows up to try to figure out, you know, what information that they have discovered at this point. And it's also when she drops the revelation that she is, in fact, experiencing John Scott's memories.
But what have we got here so far?
Nothing yet.
Walter seems to think that if we can examine this guy's flesh at the cellular level, we might be able to figure out how it is that they pass through solid matter.
What we perceive as solid matter is mostly empty space. Just as we may perceive that a life is full, that is actually a series of empty encounters.
He's been like that all day. It's been awesome.
To accomplish this, your bank robbers would need cutting-edge knowledge of quantum physics. Not to mention technology that would cost more than a dozen banks could hold.
How'd it go with Raul Lugo's wife?
Well, they were separated, so she hadn't had much contact with him for months. But she said he'd suffered from depression.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, Peter's right. Your pupils are dilated. It's a symptom of high stress. Unless you're using hallucinogens. Are you tripping, Agent Dunham?
Walter.
I didn't recognize Raul Lugo. John Scott did.
You're confusing John Scott's memories.
With my own.
So you never met this guy?
No. But I could have sworn I did.
That? I don't understand that. I need to look into that.
Okay, but first we need to figure out what happened here. Who did this, what they want, and what they're going to do next.
Now, the next clip is Nina Sharp coming into the lab room where they have John Scott. If you remember, they have been keeping John Scott in this clear case, and they're trying to get information from his brain. You know, he's dead, and they're trying to get information from his brain. Now, I needed to include this clip because this is going to play out. You know, I think this is a reminder of everybody watching that they do, in fact, have John Scott, and they want a reminder of that. I don't think we've really touched on this since... I think since like episode one. I can't remember how often we come back to this, but you know, the fact that they have his body and that they are trying to pull these memories. And I think it was just a reminder to all of us as this is going to play out. And I'm just going to play the clip, and you get the revelation that, you know, that you know, somebody else obviously has some of his memories.
Well, I thought we were making progress.
We were, but we've hit a dead end trying to reconstruct John Scott's memories. If we push further, we risk destroying the fragments we're trying to retrieve.
Not to place any undue pressure on you and your team, but we're in a race against highly motivated individuals, and right now, John Scott is our only advantage. Understood.
A good Nina Sharp clip. She doesn't get enough screen time, so I had to include the clip in here. And a good reminder that they do, in fact, have John Scott's body, and they might be able to get some information from it. And I'm just not sure. She says he's the only advantage we have. You know, the advantage over who? What exactly is going on? And it just adds more questions, you know. But, you know, ultimately we're going to get the answer to just about everything on here. I mean, I like I said before, I was satisfied with the season or the series finale of Fringe. I'm not going to give any spoilers away, but I was satisfied with it. Just about everybody I know was satisfied with it. I have received a couple of emails from people who they didn't hate it, but they weren't satisfied with it. And, you know, I'm actually saving those emails for when I get that far. So the pressure's on now for me to definitely finish the my entire series run of Fringe so that I can have this discussion. Because, again, this is one of the best this is definitely one of the best science fiction shows for Sci-Fi Dig to do, because I like everything about it. I like all the little clues. I like all the little I like the story overall. I like the way that every season we get a different angle on things. And there are some weak shows, and there are some weak there might be some weak seasons overall, but I really do enjoy the show, and I do enjoy that, you know, at the end of the day, it really is about Walter and Peter's relationship. I mean, that's what starts the show for the most part, and that's kind of, you have that continuity throughout. Now, the next clip is Walter finally figuring out how they were able to enter the vaults, you know, and there has been other break-ins as well. And Walter has been, you know, he's been working on a theory, and he has an idea of how they were able to do it. And, you know, he's examined the guy's hand, and this is what he comes up with.
I'm quite envious of this.
Of what?
Well, somehow the robbers were able to weaken the vault wall. High-frequency vibrations disrupting its atomic structure, allowing another piece of solid matter through it. Well, obviously what I'm showing you here is a theoretical example. In actuality, this feat would be immensely complicated, and apparently not without consequences. It seems that use of this technology can render one slightly radioactive.
How slightly?
Well, not as slightly as I thought. Miss, would you mind putting the hand on ice? It will help preserve the tissue.
Just so I'm clear, Walter, the robbers have managed to not only violate the natural laws of the universe, but they're also becoming radioactive?
Who's radioactive?
Our robbers, apparently. Where you been?
I've been working. Where have you been?
I've been buying rice for Walter's toys.
Did you get any leads on the safety deposit boxes?
Yeah, they were all purchased 23 years ago, all paid for in cash, bogus names on each account. How radioactive?
Slightly.
Though not as slight as Walter would like. So we have no idea who those safety deposit boxes belong to.
No, and it's untraceable. Can you call all the hospitals in and around the Philadelphia area? Get them to call us if anyone comes in showing signs of radiation poisoning?
Yeah, I'm on it.
Okay,
so what's our next move?
Well, Raul Lugo was a good kid before the military. Had a clean record, responsible employee. I want to know how he became a criminal. Why they recruited him and what they promised him.
All right, so how are we going to do that?
Lugo's wife gave me some names. It just so happens his best friend from high school works at a bar in Cambridge.
Now, I've stated before in this podcast, one of the things that I like about Fringe is that we have various elements. You know, obviously in a show like this, you have the professional, personal relationship thing between the people you work with. And then you have the relationship between, you know, the agents and the case, the people involved in the case they're working in. But you know, it seems as though whenever you do a science fiction type show and you have an FBI agent or police officer or something like that, you miss these, the regular procedural. It just seems like that is usually left out of these kind of shows. And one of the things I liked about Fringe is that they throw this in every now and then, right? They have this, they have these moments where we see Olivia doing regular detective type work, and you know, it's, there's nothing science fictiony about it. There's no special science involved. There's no magic. There's no gadgets. It's just her doing what she's been trained to do. And so I couldn't, you know, actually when I rewatched this episode, I knew right off the bat, this was one of the clips. I mean, this is the first clip that I realized off the bat that, man, I got to make sure I include this clip. And the idea here is that she's going to this bar where the bartender knows, Raul, and she's trying to use him to get some information, but he doesn't know her. So she sits down at the bar and she starts hammering back drinks and, you know, using her feminine wiles to try to, and her people skills to try to get some information from the guy. I just really like the scene. I don't know what it is, but I just really like the scene. It just seems as though, you know, in like the X-Files or something like that, we wouldn't really, and I'm going to keep making that comparison because that's the closest show that I can compare this to. And we never really see that, you know, even in the show Continuum, we don't really see, a little bit different show, but we don't see the agent using these sort of people skills. I mean, Continuum is more of a fish out of water show, and up until now, she's relied on her tools, which no longer work in the current time she's at. Okay, and if you don't know what Continuum is, look it up. It's a great show. It's showing on Sci-Fi right now. But you know, that's another show I'm going to try. I try to make some comparisons, but you don't see enough of this just straight up detective work. And I think Olivia does a great job, and I really enjoyed this scene.
I'll take another. Are you sure we haven't met before?
I don't think so.
What's your name?
Drew.
Drew, I gotta tell you, I never forget a face.
It's true, she doesn't. It's kind of creepy, actually.
I got it. Raul and Susan's wedding.
No way. You were there?
You were the best man.
Yeah.
It's incredible, right? She's been able to do that since we were kids. Remember that?
I do.
Yeah.
So do you still see them?
No, it's been years.
I was friends with Susan in college, but we lost contact, too. It's horrible. Where are they living now?
You know, I don't know. I heard they split.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
Why not?
I don't know. Raul got weird.
Weird how?
Well, you know he's in the Gulf War. He's sort of, I don't know, it's post-traumatic stress or something. No, I feel bad. I'm sure I would have lost my mind if I'd gone to the Gulf War as well. Anyway, when he got back, he didn't come around much. He started hanging out at the VA a lot.
Which one?
I don't know.
Bartender.
It's a shame. He's a good guy. Excuse me.
Sure.
Brother.
Yeah. It kind of works better that way.
Does it now?
Broyles.
It's Dunham. Look, I was wondering if you could find out what VA hospital Raul Lugo might have gone to.
There was nothing in any of his records.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm calling you.
Can you help me?
I'll do what I can.
I'll have an answer for you in an hour.
Thanks. Let's go. He's going to want us back in an hour.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's the rush? Two's your limit.
Is that a dare?
Okay, the next clip is they have a little bit of time to wait. You know, they have an hour to wait until they get some more information. And Peter suggests that if they got to wait, they might as well do it in a bar. And he's showing her some tricks. And she says that she has some tricks. And he gets excited, you know, the fact that, you know, whoa, I'll play the clip. But the thing that's important about this clip is I want to point out for those of you that you know, haven't been paying attention, you know, that this is you know, part of Olivia and Peter's relationship. You know, we're seeing it slowly over time, organically develop. All right. Now, you know, it's pretty obvious. I mean, those of you that watch Friends, I don't think it's a spoiler that they end up getting together, right? That they end up having a relationship, you know, a romantic relationship at some point. But the thing with season one that I really liked, especially, is that it's not the romantic relationship that I'm interested in. What I like is the fact that they are forming this bond of trust, and, you know, Peter doesn't really trust anybody. And, you know, it seems Olivia has, I mean, she's an FBI agent. She's suspicious of everybody. And we start out with the very first episode with the person she trusted most in the world. Her partner ends up being somebody who betrays her in a huge way. And she realized she didn't know anything about him and blah, blah, blah. And you know, so it's a big deal for her to form another bond of trust with somebody who's a partner, like, you know, and Peter has kind of become her partner in a lot of ways. And so I like these scenes where just these little bits where they have these exchanges and you slowly see, you know, their trust growing. And keep in mind that Peter has done some things for Olivia in the past episodes to help her with cases or whatever. And he's kind of gone above and beyond and maybe bent the law a little bit, maybe has, you know, done some things that she was not able to do because she's on the side of the law and he is not. And I really enjoy the scenes where we see that. You know, when I did Babylon 5, you know, my biggest thing with Babylon 5 that I really enjoyed, you know, was the relationship between Sheridan and Delenn. And if you remember, probably 80% of the episodes, I would hammer on the fact that their relationship developed so organically. They started out being, you know, on opposite sides of the table. And over time, their relationship developed. And I really enjoyed it. It wasn't like, you know, in science fiction, it seems as though you know, especially anything from like the 80s and early 90s. Well, not the 90s. 90s, everybody was sad. But during the 80s, it seemed as though they would take these shows and even the 70s and just take the two main characters, the male and female, and just slam them together. And, oh, their relationships. It's got to be a romantic entanglement. And, you know, one of the things I credit the X-Files with is the fact that, you know, for the first, what, five or six seasons, we didn't have that. It wasn't a romantic thing. They were partners, and we stayed away from the romantic entanglement. And I appreciated that, you know. And the fact that, you know, when in the X-Files, they finally do kind of have they do kind of get romantic. You know, that relationship was never very clear cut for me. But when they do get romantic, it was because it wasn't a forced thing. It's actually more forced to keep them apart because Scully and Mulder, you know, you could see you spend that much time with somebody. And when you watch the episodes, we get further and further away from any kind of home life they have. And we just focus on all the cases and everything, and you can't help but spend so much time with somebody of the opposite sex, and you guys are so so focused on the same things all the time that, you know, it seemed kind of pointless to try to it seemed very forced that they weren't hooking up because of the fact that so much of their lives were within one another. I mean, they spent so much time together. Their worlds were the same, you know. But anyway, with Fringe, it's not the romantic part I like. It's the part of them developing trust. And this is one of the scenes where you slowly see that building up. And it's also a great revelation for the case that they're working on. And I really dug this scene for all those reasons. But I definitely like when we get to the end of the clip and Peter has a revelation of that he understands the numbers.
Okay. Seriously? Oh, that's fantastic. Women never have card tricks.
Tell me when to stop. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Stop.
Which one? 4 of clubs. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Queen of diamonds.
You can count cards.
That's all I would do when I was a kid. I'm sure that if I was a child today, I would be diagnosed with something. I just have this thing for numbers. I see them once and remember them for the rest of my life.
Seriously?
Yeah. My best friend from high school's license plate, 7240168. My locker combination in middle school, 36217. The numbers of the safety deposit boxes, 233, 377, and 610.
What?
I can do more.
No. Say that again. The numbers on the safety deposit boxes.
233, 377, and 610. Why?
I know those numbers. Walter. Hey. Walter, wake up. Walter, wake up. This is important.
Do you two want to use the room?
Walter, this is important. The numbers that you recite every night, what are they?
Numbers?
Every night you recite a sequence of numbers to help you fall asleep. 233, 377, 610.
987, 1,597.
Precisely, those. What is that pattern?
It's a Fibonacci sequence. You should know that, Peter. If you had stayed at college...
Walter, not everybody knows the Fibonacci sequence.
Oh, sure they do. It's a wildly famous mathematical sequence. Each number in the sequence is the sum of the two preceding.
Including 233, 377, and 610, which just happened to be the numbers of the safety deposit boxes that were stolen.
It's fascinating. But it's a coincidence. It can't possibly be significant. Unless... Oh, my God.
What?
The safety deposit boxes are mine. Cleveland, Baltimore, Philadelphia. Cleveland, Baltimore, Philadelphia.
Walter, are there any other safety deposit boxes that haven't been broken into yet?
I don't know. I don't know where, because I can't remember why I put things into the box.
All right, so let me get this straight. You can remember traveling around the country 23 years ago, renting all these safety deposit boxes under assumed names, but you can't remember why.
The why is of secondary importance to what? What was I protecting? Whatever it was, I didn't use my usual hiding places, so I suspect it was something of profound significance.
Well, excellent. That clears it right up.
I was under a great deal of stress at the time.
It was before the accident in the lab. Before that poor lab assistant lost her life.
I was distrustful of everybody. William Bell, your mother.
I was convinced I was being followed. Someone was watching my every move.
Which medication is that, Walter?
No, supplements.
Walter, did you tell anybody else?
I told you I was paranoid.
Okay, get dressed. We're going out.
Breakfast?
Now, one of the things about the last clip, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that this is the first time that Walter actually discusses or even mentions the death of the lab assistant. You know, he kind of brings it up, and I don't know if this is, you know, again, I tend to read way more into these episodes sometimes than what they meant. But in my mind, I think that this is the writer's way of showing that this character is becoming more independent. The fact that he can discuss what has happened to the lab assistant. I mean, that is what he ended up going to, what he ended up getting. I can't say go to prison, but, you know, being confined to the asylum for. And I like the fact that they don't just gloss this over, that they bring this up, you know, yet again. And, you know, I really enjoy that. Now, the next clip that I have is, again, of Nina Sharp. And, you know, you just have to deal with it, people. I'm going to put Nina Sharp clips in here because I think she's a fantastic foil for the and just so multidimensional, but a fantastic foil for the group here. And I really I enjoy her screen time. I enjoy what she does for this show. And it's funny because I was just having a discussion with somebody about bad guys. You know, you have these bad guys in shows, and you hate them so much. They do their job so well. You just hate them so much. And when they finally get their due, you're so happy. You know, you watch it like, yeah, they finally got it. They deserve that. They were just such jerks. And then it sets in that, man, the bad guy's gone. And I really like that character because you need to find somebody equally as evil, you know, to replace them so that they can have a new bad guy, you know. And will the new bad guy be as good as the old one? Because we spent all this time building up the old one. We really despise them, and they just do such a good job of being despicable. And then suddenly they're gone, you know. And that doesn't necessarily happen in Nina Sharp's case, but she's too multifaceted. She's not just, you know, straight up evil or anything like that. But I just really enjoy her character. Anyway, I'm going to shut up.
Something remarkable, actually. When we tried to access Agent Scott's hippocampus, his brainwave echo suddenly became erratic, inconsistent in ways we've never seen.
And the cause of the inconsistency?
We managed to resolve the last image in Agent Scott's optic nerve before he died. This image is linked to a second set of brainwave echoes. Agent Dunham's. They must have somehow shared consciousness. If that's the case, it would suggest that some of John Scott's memories, perhaps the very ones we need, are in Agent Dunham's mind.
So now it seems that all parties involved realize that Dunham is sharing or experiencing John Scott's memories. I can't say sharing because she's experiencing it. She thinks it's her own. Before I get the next clip, I have to tell you what the glyphs spell out. They spell out trade. And there were a couple of songs in the episode. Sister Lost Soul was one of the songs, and Sequestered in Memphis was the other song. And again, you know, for the music, I find that Fringipedia is better than anything else that I've been able to find that has the songs listed. And they actually have iTunes links where you can click on it so you can support Fringipedia. I'm not sure what will happen to Fringipedia now that Fringe is over, but I hope it stays around for a very long time. I love these wikis or these websites that have all this show information and are updated, you know, and just, you know, I just love it. It's a great resource, and a show like Fringe, you definitely need this. And it also has like Walter's lab notes, which I don't really go into, where I believe the Walter's lab notes were something that Fox was putting up so that you were able to go and look at the lab notes and kind of take part in the investigation that was going on, you know, just a little extra stuff online that you were able to you know, join in with, you know, like a lot of shows were doing that at the time. And I'm not sure how many shows still do that, but it's kind of interesting. And in a show like this, it definitely helps. Now, the next clip I have is where, you know, Dunham has a pretty good idea of where the next hit's going to be, and she's trying to get the information. And, you know, Peter has been asking Walter, and he cannot remember anything, and he's just being kind of difficult. And Walter and Astrid are brushing the cow and taking care of the cow, and Astrid's not having a very good time. But I just really, I like this scene, like the way Peter plays this.
Hey, what's up?
We think the next bank hit is going to go down in Providence.
Can you talk to Walter and see if it jogs his memory?
Yeah, sure.
Downstrokes only, you brush with the grain.
Hey, Walter, are any of those banks you rented the safety deposit boxes in Providence?
Providence? I don't believe so, no. I'm sorry, Peter, I have tried everything to remember. I understand how important it is, and I'm quite disappointed with myself.
Hold on a sec.
When she's finished chewing a cud, remember to brush her teeth.
I am not brushing a cow's teeth, Walter. You know I have real work to do, right?
Hey, Walter, if you were going to rent a safety deposit box in Providence, what bank would you use?
Providence, that would have to be the Fairmont Savings Bank off Westminster Street. It's the only one with safe deposit boxes big enough for my purposes. Oh, well done, sir.
The Fairmont Savings Bank off Westminster Street.
Now, the next clip is they are able to get to the bank, and they're able to capture one of the people who broke into the bank. You know, the crew gets away, but one guy doesn't quite make it to the van. They're able to arrest him. He's a wreck because of the radiation. Dunham is questioning him. She's not getting anything. And so Charlie texts her during the interrogation and says that Peter wants to give it a try. So he's getting ready. They're crossing paths as he's entering the room, and him and Dunham have an exchange. She's getting frustrated, and here's the entire clip.
We lose him, we lose time, we lose everything.
Look, you're a tough guy. I'm a tough guy. I think we can dispense with the formalities. I'm not going to stick a thumb in that shot-up leg of yours because, A, I think that's exactly what you expect me to do, and, B, I don't think you'd crack anyway.
Now, all I want from you is to show me your hands. Right. Let me see if any of this rings a bell for you. You've been shaking uncontrollably. You vomited at least twice in the last 10 hours, and this morning you found hair on your pillow because it's starting to fall out.
What's wrong with me?
Radiation poisoning. Right now you're in the walking ghost phase, which I suggest you enjoy because it's a hell of a lot better than the intestinal bleeding, delirium, and coma phase you're going to hit in a couple of days. You violated the laws of physics, Mr. Eastwick, and Mother Nature's a bitch.
Are you a doctor?
First, I need to know what you were hired to steal.
He didn't tell us.
Who's he? I need a name.
He never told us his name. All right? We were freelance, hired out. He equipped us, trained us. I can tell you the names of the others, but it doesn't matter anyway. He's got everything he needs now.
Everything he needs to do what?
Are you gonna help me or not?
Actually, Ryan, no.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to go on the other side of that glass, and I'm going to watch you bleed out, unless you tell me everything I need to know.
I swear I don't know what he's doing. All I know is I overheard a phone conversation once. He's going to a field in Westford.
A field? What field?
I don't know. Look, man, you got to help me, all right? I need some medicine, okay? Some specialist.
Please, you got to help me. Hey!
Now, the next clip, they're looking at the map and are trying to figure out, you know, where whatever's going to happen is going to happen. They don't quite understand what's going on, but they know something big is going down. They're looking at the map, and this is a great clip because it ties into an episode a few weeks, well, for Sci-Fi Dig a few weeks ago, you know, a couple episodes back.
There, Westford.
That's 30 square miles. How are we going to find one field in all of that?
Wait.
What?
I know where they're going. There's an abandoned airstrip out there. It's called Little Hill Field. Little Hill. It's the code word that Joseph Smith gave to David Robert Jones in the case a few weeks ago.
The guy from the German prison?
It can't be a coincidence, Charlie. It's in Westford, just off Route 3. You come in from the west. I'll take the south.
All right.
Listen up! I need every available unit for field assist! Let's move, move, move!
Now, this all ties into episode 107. I looked that up as the clip played because I couldn't remember, in which we meet Mr. Jones. I'll always remember that episode because, first of all, I like the title. Secondly, when I was recording the breakdown for that, I could not say that, save that title. I can't even talk. I could not say that title to save my life. That was when I took the injury to the eye, the headphone injury to the eye, that I'm not sure if I ever posted a picture of that, but I gave myself a black eye with headphones. Yes, it takes, you don't understand the pain and suffering I go through to bring you this podcast. But anyway, so I always remember that, but I like when we have things that tie together, you know, Little Hill, you know, was a big deal. And it just, I like when the episodes tie together. Anyway, the next clip that I have, is just a revelation that Walter has about about his and Peter's past. And it, you know, I'm not exactly sure, you know, normally the clip doesn't really fit into the scheme of the episode, but they're having a conversation and this comes up. You know, Walter gets real silent and Peter wants to know what's going on. And Walter just kind of dumps all this information in his lap.
What?
You nearly died when you were a boy. You started bruising, then your kidneys failed. Doctors didn't know what it was. The closest diagnosis was hippia. It's a rare form of bird flu that hadn't been around for decades. Your mother was beside herself. She stopped eating, she stopped sleeping. And I was worse. After all, I was the scientist. Here, my only son was dying, and I couldn't do anything about it.
Walter, I don't remember any of that.
I became consumed with saving you, conquering the disease. In my research, I discovered a doctor, Alfred Gross, Swiss, brilliant physician. He was the only man that had ever successfully cured a case of hippia. But there was a problem. He had died in 1936, and so I designed a device intended to reach back into time to cross time-space continuum and retrieve Alfred Gross, to bring him back with me to fix you, my dying son. The device, Peter. I think that's what I hid in those safe deposit boxes.
And it worked. You were able to go back to 1936 and get this guy.
No. Before I could test it, you started to recover. Doctor said it was a miracle. But the science behind it, in theory, it would work. In theory, it could retrieve anyone from anywhere.
Pretty clear I shouldn't be doing these breakdowns because I have no idea what I'm talking about. Obviously, that last clip tied in directly into the episode. I don't know what's going on. I took a headphone shot to the eye. Did I mention that? I mean, granted, that was a little while last week sometime, but still, I'm going to go ahead and use that for a while now until I somehow injure myself in some other way. But definitely that whole clip ties directly into the episode because we figure out what the heck Walter was building. I don't know what I was thinking there. So my apologies for that. I just, I'm just an idiot. But anyway, it's, we're building up these little pieces that Walter keeps dropping about Peter when he was younger. And the relationship that him and Peter had, and you know, I don't want to give any spoilers, okay? I just don't want to give any spoilers at this point to anything that's going to happen in the future for those people that are watching as we go. But those of you in the know where all this is going. It's pretty apparent at this point in time, exactly, you know, what has happened. And we're going to get a big reveal here pretty soon about Peter and Walter's past relationship. But anyway, I just like these little seeds that are dropped. You know, we had the one several episodes ago, I can't remember the episode name, where, you know, Walter says something to Olivia and she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he's like, oh, okay, just never mind then, you know. Anyway, what happens is that they're on their way to raid this airfield to figure out what's going on here. And on the way, a black SUV comes out of nowhere, forces Olivia off the road. Olivia jumps out of the car. She's talking to Charlie. He's trying to get a location. She starts to run away as all these people empty out of the vehicles. They end up shooting her with a trank dart. And that's all we see of Olivia. She's gone from the rest of the episode. Doesn't include her because she has been kidnapped, and we're not quite sure what's going on. That's all going to play out in the next episode, which is one of my favorite episodes. I love the next episode. But anyway, Broyles finds out about it. He is not a happy camper. And I got to tell you that if I was ever on the wrong side of Broyles, I would just be like, you know, even if I didn't do anything wrong, I'm pretty sure I would just confess to it, because he's just so soft-spoken. And even when he's angry, he's soft-spoken, and it scares the hell out of me. It really does. But anyway, he naturally thinks Nina Sharp might be involved. So here's a great scene between two of the characters we don't get enough of. We don't get enough of Burroughs and Nina, and I love this call where they're both as far as the characters go and the way that they're written, they are both at their best here. Broyles in charge, and Nina, who's kind of has a little bit of wounded pride here and has that whole, like, you know, is she a villain? Is she not a villain? What's going on here? Just a great clip. Probably one of my favorite clips up until this point of the two characters, and only because I haven't pulled the audio for the rest of the season. But I just think this is a great clip defining both characters and the things that I like about both of them.
Hello?
Olivia Dunham is missing.
What? What do you mean, missing?
It appears she's been abducted. Need I even ask? Are you there?
No, yes, I'm here. Frankly, I resent the accusation.
I don't make accusations. So let me be clear. If I find out...
Philip, that's enough. That you know how I feel about Agent Dunham. Why would I want any harm to come to her?
Now, what do we know about who may have taken her? And why?
Fantastic clip right there. I just love everything about it. And it goes to Broyles' character. You know, it's really a character building thing for him, right? Because here's a guy that didn't even like Dunham when he met her. But we learn that once you become one of his agents, and you are within his family, so to speak, if somebody messes with you, you better look out, because, you know, you don't want to be messing with him because he, you know, he's very protective, and that comes through, you know, with his character. And it's not, I don't think it is a, you know, the way it's played is he plays everything pretty straight. So it's not like it's a male-female thing. I think he would have the same reaction if any of his agents were taken and he had any information that might be able to lead to finding them. Now, I have one final clip, and it is of Mr. Jones, that we find out that the apparatus, all the things that they were getting, that Walter said you can get anybody from anywhere. What happens is Mr. Jones's attorney comes back one last time, and Mr. Jones snaps his neck and puts on his suit and puts on his suntan lotion and all the other crap that he had him bring, and he stands there in the corner just waiting. And so they were able to basically make a transporter, and they were able to get him from prison and into this field. And he appears, and this is where, you know, our agent Loeb says, you know, hey, you know, what do you say during, you know, after something like this? Let me just play the clip, because otherwise I'll just tell you the whole clip, right? Right.
So what does one say at a moment like this? Nice trip?
I suppose that works well enough. I need to get into the decompression chamber.
Of course.
Do you have her, Agent Dunham?
She didn't even put up a fight.
Well then, let's not keep her waiting.
So we're going to find out at least some information next time about what it is that they need Dunham for, what's the plan is here. We're going to find out some information. But at any rate, the next episode, which is one of my favorites, as I said, and, you know, I will talk more about that next week, but it's Bound. And I would suggest that if you have not watched the episode Bound recently, you go and watch it again, because I'm trying to get everybody amped up for the next episode. This is your opportunity. You're going to have a week to to have the time to go and rewatch it. It's well worth it. Everything about the episode is fantastic. We have a new foil, a new nemesis for her next week, and we have a fantastic, absolutely fantastic escape scene. I have my problems with how she was able to escape, but I love the music. I love everything that's going on. I love the fact that when you are watching her, I would like to know more about the escape scene. And I haven't looked at the special features on to see if they cover it. I mean, I've looked over a lot of the special features, but I don't know that they discuss the escape scene. I'll talk more about this next week, but I like the way that when we get that far, we're going to see her in action and see her using her FBI training, and it works out real well. Anyway, that's next week. This week we're still talking about Safe. That's it for the episode. I think that this was this is a good episode. I didn't look at any kind of rating what people rate this episode, but I rather enjoyed it because we had other episodes that were getting information, and everything's kind of leading to this, right? The whole idea was to get Mr. Jones out of jail, and I like when things tie together like that, because up until now you're just like, well, you know, yeah, they're doing these things, but they're not really explaining why they're doing them. They're stealing technology. You know, all these things are building up. These little fringe science things are happening. It's not really making a lot of sense. And then when everything kind of comes together, you know, you had the episode, The Equation, where, you know, at the end, the main girl dies, and then, you know, he has this device where he's able to reach into a safe and pull out an apple, and you're like, that's great, but what do we, you know, what's all this mean? They want to be able to just steal apples? I don't, you know, what's going on? And so when it all comes together and you have several episodes that touch, that this episode touches back to, that we've saw these little tiny stories or major stories in the other episode, I love that. I mean, that is one of the things I enjoy about serialized, you know, science fiction, is when you're kind of left with a lot of questions, and then you have the payoff episode where a bunch of the questions are answered. I mean, granted, we get new ones, but I do enjoy that. You know, I enjoy questions being posed and then them being answered even at a later date. Anyway, getting kind of rambly. This is already way longer than the entire episode is, but I enjoy your feedback. As always, go to scifidig.com and you can find a gazillion ways to contact me. And I always look forward to any kind of fringe MP3s, you know, audio recorded in MP3 format, or the comment line that you would like. So feel free to anything coming up. I don't care if it's the final episode and you want to send it to me now, you go ahead and do that, because I will be saving all of these and be playing them as time goes on. But feel free to send those my way. Anyway, the episode was Safe, and I will talk to everybody next time. Now, I said that I had Game of Thrones and hadn't gotten around to watching it. Well, what happened to me was, well, first of all, I was getting caught up on all my comic reading. Okay, there was a ton of stuff that I wanted to read, and it had just gotten backed up. So I did a whirlwind read of a lot of the Green Lantern books, and Death of the Family. I was behind on that, and I read all of that. I had like 2 days and probably the past couple of weeks where I read like 30 comics a day. I just said, heck with it. The weather was terrible outside, and I sat down and burned through some of those and really enjoyed the heck out of it. There's some of those Batman covers that are just absolutely outstanding. But anyway, I had gotten not one, not two, but three texts in the past month, or communications in the past month, people asking me about a British conspiracy thriller called Utopia. And try as I might, I could not find a legitimate way to watch this. So a friend gave me a copy, and I watched the first episode, and it took me like three attempts, because I just watched a little bit at a time because I was doing things. I'm going to do a show about this in the future, but you have to go investigate this. It's Utopia, the TV series. And I'm going to give you, I'm actually looking at the Wikipedia article, so I'm going to give you their brief synopsis, and then I'll tell you a little bit about it. And then I got to wind this up because I'm going to run out of server space. The story follows a small group of people who find themselves in possession of the manuscript sequel of a cult graphic novel called The Utopia Experiments, which is rumored to have predicted the worst disasters in the last century. This leads them to be targeted by an organization known as The Network, which they must avoid to survive. Using the manuscript, they must uncover the meaning hidden in its pages before the disasters depicted become reality. Now, I thought, yeah, okay, you know, whatever. I hadn't done a whole lot of research on it. I wasn't sure what to expect, but I had, like I said, three people tell me, hey, have you checked this out? And I got so sucked into the first episode. It is so, aside from the story, which I'm really loving, it is just so creepy in a lot of ways. Like, there's a guy that hardly ever talks, but he goes after people and kills people. And it is just so creepy. And for a UK series, my God, is it violent. There's a scene where they're rubbing salt into a guy's eyeballs because they're trying to question him. And there's a spoon involved. That's all I'm going to say. But it is crazy ridiculous. I had no idea what was going on. And until the end, until you get into episode two, you're not quite sure exactly what the Utopia graphic novel, the manuscript that they have, what's going on, what it's all about. I highly recommend this series. Now, I'm only three episodes in. I still have three to go. But I have just been kind of sucked into this world. And I cannot... Actually, as soon as I get done recording this, I'm going to go watch episode four because I am just loving the heck out of this. It is so in-depth. It's kind of like The X-Files in a lot of ways, but on like super steroids and a lot creepier. And I knew that it was a show that I was gonna get into when in the first episode, somehow or other, these people meet in a chat room, a Utopia chat room, and somebody, there's like, you know, just like I said, the three or four individuals, and somebody finds out, they're able to find out about them, and the next day when they go to work, that's when trouble starts. You know, that like one guy gets arrested for child rape, even though that he wasn't there. There was no way he could have been there when it happened, and we know he wasn't there. Somebody else gets arrested. A kid gets set up for doing some things he didn't do. They use CGI to put his face on some and put his face and body in a video surveillance. And you're like, how does this stretch? You know, how far does this organization, the network, how much reach do they have? There's a cop that's investigating it. He doesn't really believe them, but the guy spills the beans about what's going on, and they end up going after him. And at that point, you realize, okay, well, the cops aren't a part of this. You know, this is just a really black ops kind of organization that's doing all this. And, man, it really just sucked me in. So, I don't want to give too much more away than that. Just know that, you know, that it's the typical small group versus some sort of black ops big organization. And it is it's very creepy in a lot of ways. I mean, there's big long sections where there's no dialogue and you're just kind of following somebody around. It is, it's crazy, but it has, one of the guys that played in the Misfits in it. And I have no idea what his name is. I'm just throwing that out there. And, man, I'm really enjoying it. I wouldn't believe. And again, it just shows you how, like with British television, now, I haven't watched all six episodes, but they say that, there's only six episodes and it's winding up. I don't know if there's going to be a series two or not, but I just love the fact that they say, okay, we're going to tell the story. It's going to take this many episodes, the end. We're not going to stretch it out supernatural and run into the ground X-Files. And so I'm really, you know, really been digging that. So go and check that out. And hopefully, I'm hoping that BBC America will air this because I cannot wait to watch it there. And I think this is something that's intense enough that I will probably buy a DVD set of this if it's reasonable for the six episodes, because I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing. So anyway, that's all I got. As always, feedback can be sent to scifidig.com. If you go to scifidig.com, you can find the 8 gazillion ways to interact with me and with the other diggers. We have quite the social network. Also, you can go to the forums, and there is just a million ways to interact. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow my Photo a Day project, which I'm now a little bit behind on. And you can go to Facebook. I have a Facebook group for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. I have a Facebook group for the 10,000 push-ups. I just decided to create it on the spur because we had a bunch of people that were into it. Next thing I know, the group is growing and growing. And that's about it. That's about all I got going on in my world. That and my new puppy, who apparently when you give dewormer to a puppy, gives them explosive diarrhea, which not a lot of fun when you got to take a dog out every 20 minutes. Also, whenever I do my push-ups, the dog thinks it's time to tackle my head, which is funny for about 1 second, and then you start laughing. You know how hard it is to continue doing your – I'm trying to do incline push-ups. How hard it is to do that when a dog is tackling your head? I have no idea why she thinks that's playtime, but anyway, she's doing fine as well. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. Over and out.